When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X, and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb, and this week Julie is out on vacation, so we thought we would rerun a pair of episodes that we were really proud of and we received a lot of positive feedback from our listeners about. I'm speaking, of course, of The Scientist and the Shaman. This two-parter deals with psychedelics, with the psychedelic compounds, the psychotropic compounds that have been with us for ages, their effects on the human mind, and how modern science is turning back to some of these substances to see how they can aid us in understanding how the mind works, how to treat various disorders, etc. So, and have a listen to this classic pair of episodes. Just up front, I want to mention that on this podcast and the other Shaman and Scientist podcast that we're putting out, we are going to be talking about psychedelics, so, and by which I mean psychedelic drugs a bit. So just be aware, we're going to handle this in a mature, science-backboned sense, but I know that this subject is probably not for everybody. So just a fair warning that that's what we're going to be talking about, and we do not advocate the use of psychedelic substances and illicit substances at all, and urge you not to do them. But the science behind them is really fascinating. The current scientific investigations of how they affect our mind and what they can help uncover about how our minds work is totally game, totally in our wheelhouse. So we just had to cover it. We've covered it a little bit in the past. So here are another couple of slices from that particular cake.
Yeah, and we just couldn't help it because a lot of times we talk about what is consciousness, and we'll get deeper into that question in this podcast. But psychedelics, turns out, can help us answer that question or get a little bit closer to what we think consciousness is. But all of this was actually inspired by a talk that you went to.
Yes, and you went to, in a sense,
via the wonderful recording that you took of it. It was a talk at Emory University, yeah?
Yes, it was called For I Am the Black Jaguar. Well, it was part of the For I Am the Black Jaguar exhibit, which is an art exhibit they did having to do with shamanistic visionary experience in ancient American art. So a lot of ancient American art that depicts things that it might be jaguars, it might be mushroom men, things of this nature that have something to do with shamanistic traditions, particularly as they relate to the consumption of psychedelic, psychotropic substances.
And a lot of it, too, is this unity with nature and this mm-hmm. unity of man, or the duality, I should say, of human and animal, and then the bringing together of these different aspects
right.
of our humanness.
And the talk that I attended was given by Dr. Catherine McLean, and also Dr. Charles Raison was there as well. But McLean is particularly interesting because she is involved with some really groundbreaking investigations at Johns Hopkins, where they are looking into, again, how these substances affect the human mind and human consciousness and human perceptions, and what that can tell us about how our brains actually work. Because one of the things she pointed out in her talk is that, you know, we're talking about how these things change our consciousness, mm-hmm. affect our consciousness, and we already have a difficult time actually saying what human consciousness is and how it works. To get back to the title of the episode, we're talking about the
shaman. I like the voice she did, so can you do that again?
Which one?
The title of not just the episode, but of the exhibit.
Oh, For I Am the Black Jaguar.
Yes, thank
See,
you.
I was listening to an old Timothy Leary album earlier to get kind of stoked up. Because
mm-hmm.
Leary was first a scientist, then a shaman. And anyway, we're going to get into that a little more. But on the surface of things, you have the shaman in one category and the scientist in the other, right? Dragging in a lot of stereotypes here, but the shaman, you think of a shaman, you think of somebody that's spiritual. They're ritualistic. They're magical. They're heartfelt. They might have a really long beard and varying degrees of robes or no robes at all, right?
Mm-hmm. Man or woman.
Man or woman. Then you have the scientist, which again can be a man or woman, but logical, meticulous, reasoned, with a certain amount of distance between themselves and their feelings and the subject matter they're looking into. So we, on the surface of things, we would tend to think of these as very different people, very different modes of perception when it comes to the realities of the world and the realities of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
But the curious thing, okay, is that, all right, so the shaman, he looks inward, he or she looks inward at the mysteries of the soul and human consciousness. And so, too, of course, does the cognitive neuroscientist. So, you know, the questions of who are we? What's the root cause of human suffering? How do we achieve liberation from it? How can we treat mental illness? Questions of these nature are on various levels covered by both sides. So while they're very different, if you were to form a Venn diagram, you know, with the two circles with partial overlap, and you had one circle as the shaman, one circle as the neuroscientist, there would be a definite overlap there. Now, of course, the shaman helps you explore these questions by bringing you into a sacred space, producing a tray of magical substances that, when consumed, alter your perception and experience of reality, setting you on a journey of exploration. Meanwhile, the scientist brings you into a lab, right? Gives you a pill that might be a placebo, and then runs some tests on you. Maybe throws you into a brain imaging machine or hooks you up to some sensors, right? These seem like very different scenarios that one might find oneself in. But then there's also some interesting overlap here as well, particularly at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. That's where, again, Dr. Catherine McLean conducts her research, along with a very talented assortment of professionals. And they find themselves not going completely halfway between the shaman and the scientists, but entering a little more into that shamanistic territory because they keep like a calm meditative space
mm-hmm.
to put the test subjects in when they are given some of these psychedelic substances. And Catherine McLean in this talk at Emory actually spoke a bit about her role as a kind of guide for these people too, because they end up trying to color their experiences to an extent, you know, to guide their trip, as it were, in a direction that's more positive so that they can study it.
Yeah, we talked about this a bit in our podcast about hallucinogens and stage 4 cancer patients who were taking hallucinogens in an effort to try to get over this huge obstacle of fear that was really actually just sort of affecting them on a level where they were like deer in the headlights. They
Right.
couldn't even operate in the space of their lives anymore. And so, you know, we've talked about this idea where in a lab setting, you want to have a level of trust. You want to make it as comforting as possible. And so the researchers, the scientists, are, as you say, taking on this persona of guide, of spiritual guide to a certain extent, because they have to guide people through this. And I think it's really interesting that Kathleen McLean is also a Buddhist, and she does kind of
right.
inhabit that space of the shaman from time to time.
Yeah, heavy into meditation and all that.
And I can't help to think about another past podcast having to do with magicians and neuroscience. Because, again, you've got neuroscience looking at magicians, looking at these hundreds of years old practices and trying to learn something about reality and illusion and how our mind tricks us. And what is so central to this idea of mind trickery, I think, is something called the monkey mind.
Yes.
And probably a lot of you out there are familiar with this concept that this constant chatter in our brains can sometimes hamstring us when we're trying to accomplish things in our lives. And of course, this all points back to the question of consciousness and this idea about whether or not consciousness is actually a static thing. Now, McLean, in her talk, says, I'm not quite sure consciousness is something that is coherent. But again, it's this idea of trying to get into what's going on in these 3 pounds of computational material in our brains. She says, you know, it's hard to really try to pin it down and figure out what's going on. She says we can't explain normal consciousness in terms of neuroscience, so explaining altered states of consciousness is even more difficult. And I also wanted to point this out, too, as we begin to delve into consciousness and the monkey mind. I've brought this up before. There was a study by Harvard psychologist Daniel Gilbert and Matthew Killingsworth, and they actually developed an iPhone app that would track people's waking states and their ability to concentrate and so on and so forth. And something like 2,200 people participated in this study, and what they found was that mind wandering is something that takes up half of our time.
Yes.
And that seems pretty big, but when you step back and you look at it throughout the day, you know, how when you're not speaking, when you're not doing something that really requires you to fire on all four cylinders, what are you doing? You're daydreaming, right?
Yeah.
So hence you've got this monkey mind, and hence you have this idea that maybe some of this consciousness points back to this chatter in our brains.
Yeah, there. You see this represented various ways, too, in other modes of thought outside of science. There's always the classic vision of the guy with a demon on one shoulder and an angel on the other. These little voices that are chattering at him saying, you should be doing this. No, you should be doing this. You should steal that candy bar. No, you should pay for that candy bar with hard-earned money.
Do you steal it?
I always try and compromise. Steal half of it, buy the other half, you know. But it's the classic moral dilemma, whether to steal the candy bar. But then you also have people like New Age guru Eckhart Tolle, who calls it the egoic mind. And you see that term thrown around a lot as well, this idea that it's this mode of thinking that's very tied into to who I am, what my story is. We've talked about that before when we were talking about storytelling and the power of storytelling and how we all kind of see our lives in this mode of story. I am the central character in my story, and these are the obstacles I am up against. These are the things I have achieved, and these are the things that I have lost. So it's this default mode network, as it's called in the scientific papers, not to be confused with Depeche mode network.
Because
that would waver between just can't get enough and Black Celebration. Whereas the default mode network is, again, this sort of idle thinking zone. In its better states, it's introspective. It's daydreaming. In its worst states, it's depressive. It's that demon on your shoulder beating you up and saying, oh, these are the things that I don't have anymore. These are the things about me that suck, and I'm never going to succeed, and this kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, this is where when we start talking about consciousness and defining the I of ourselves, you start to look at the default mode network, because this is where you have your pastiche of memories, feelings, and thoughts. And again, that chatter, that me, me, me. What we're talking about when we talk about the default mode network is the medial prefrontal cortex, the medial parietal cortex, and the medial temporal lobes. And the idea, there's a couple of different theories about what they're doing. The idea is that these associations between these different parts of the brain are the brain's baseline of processing and information, where we consolidate experiences and we prepare to react to the environment. The second theory is that it also facilitates stream of conscious thought, also known as stimulus-independent thought, which I think is really interesting to note. Stimulus-independent thought, meaning you're not even aware of your surroundings. You're just chattering, chattering, chattering. To me, I think of it as like, you know, driving to work every day and I pull into the parking lot and go, oh, how did I get here? I don't really have a memory of that because I was so consumed with my own thoughts. So it's sort of stuff that you see in daydreaming. Again, keep in mind that half of our day is spent in this state of daydreaming.
And it's important to hear it also totally takes you out of your surroundings.
Yeah.
You know, like on your drive to work, if you kind of go into autopilot mode and suddenly you're there because it's like you weren't actually on that drive to work. You were wrapped up in these thoughts of what happened yesterday or what's going to happen with the rest of your day. Totally wrapped up in your thought life. Everything else in your surroundings, be it, you know, the highway on the drive to work or a beautiful park or the love of your family, all of it just kind of fades as this inner dialogue kicks up. And by pointing out the parts of the brain, I think that's the really amazing part here, is that, you know, on one hand, we're talking about the devil and angel on your shoulders. We're talking about grasping in the Buddhist sense for things that you want or don't have and all this inner kind of spiritual stuff. But we can actually look at the brain and look at the part, the network that lights up when this kind of thinking takes place.
Right, and this kind of thinking does need to happen, right? Because it is balancing this sense of self and this ego, and again, it's giving us some sort of consciousness or idea of ourselves through this process. The problem, of course, is when there's hyperactivity in this area.
It's like when a dog has some sort of problem on its skin, right? It's going to lick, it's going to gnaw a little bit, but then it gets out of hand when that gnawing and that licking never stops, when it turns into self-harm. And certainly we see that time and time again in patients who have a variety of mental problems where we see see this heightened activity in this default mode network.
Yeah, and according to Dr. Charles Raison, who was also part of that talk, people with depression exhibit hyperactivity in the default mode network. So as you say, it's fascinating because you can literally point to that brain scan and you can see that hyperactivity and you can see that it's the cause of some of this depression. Because now think about that chattering and this this idea of that chattering is absolutely involved with self and worry. So what you have going on is this sort of midline chatter that is encouraging a person to turn inward. And then in addition to that hyperactive default mode network, it becomes more and more entangled with the anterior cingulate cortex, which is responsible for the fear response. So not only do you have this turning inward, you now have a fear factor that's involved, and this can contribute really heavily to depression.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Stay tuned for more.
What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
Dad deserves something really nice for Father's Day, but let's face it, we usually don't do it. Big gifts are for Mother's Day. Picking something up on the way is for Father's Day. Well, let's make Father's Day something this year with the Bartesian Cocktail Maker. It whips up over 60 premium cocktails on demand, each ready at the push of a button. And right now, you get $50 off the Bartesian Cocktail Maker when you buy one pack of Dad's favorite cocktail capsules. Dad will publicly love that you saved $50 on the countertop machine that crafts premium cocktails on demand. And he'll secretly love that you splurged on him for Father's Day with the gift of a Bartesian. Because the only thing that lets Dad know he's the world's number one dad better than a world's number one dad coffee mug is an artisan cocktail in his hand. Make Dad's Father's Day and Father's Day cocktails with all natural juices and bitters without making any mess at all. Visit bartesian.com/father to get $50 off the best premium cocktail maker for Dad at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Ever tried to tackle a home improvement project without making 10 trips to Home Depot? What if I told you there's a way to earn cash back while you shop? Introducing Drop, the ultimate rewards app. With Drop, you can earn free gift cards by shopping in-store or online at Home Depot and tons of other stores. Download the Drop app today and use code DROP33 to get an instant $5 in points. That's Drop, your go-to for shopping rewards.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So we bring all of this up because this is really important in terms of some experiments with hallucinogens. Mm-hmm. And perhaps relieving this depression, this quieting the default mode network, as well as meditation.
Right. And before we get into that, I do, of course, need to stress the thing about the default mode network is that under normal situations, it's more active during rest than it is during task performance. So it's when you're in that that easy state of driving to work, a road that you travel every day, or you're waiting on something, you're just sitting around. It's like the screensaver of your mind. But if you're busy, if you are just vigorously trying to get something done at the last minute, or you're in that state of flow with a job or a hobby that you love, or certainly if you're engaging, say, in yoga, where you're totally in your body and not in your mind, we see that network shut down to a certain extent.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because there is this idea of getting outside of yourself, right? So if you're doing something that's in a state of flow, then you're getting outside of that chatter and that mind, and you're quieting the default mode network.
Now, this is where we're going to get a little more back into psychedelics. And I just want to do a quick note about the nature of psychedelics, just a reminder about what we're talking about here, okay? For the most part, especially as far as shamanistic practices go, you know, ancient spiritual practices that date back long before ability to create synthetic drugs. We're talking about naturally occurring substances such as psilocybin mushrooms, ayahuasca vines, we're talking about peyote, cacti, and other naturally occurring psychoactive substances in vegetation, in animals, you know, toads, centipedes, what have you. And then when taken, they have the potential to alter virtually every level of awareness and experience. Now, some of you listening may have had some sort of experiences with this kind of altered state of mind, either naturally occurring or due to illness or any other.
Lucid dreaming is sometimes.
Lucid dreaming is sometimes in this category.
Talked about, yeah.
But for a lot of other people, you may hear about, you know, tripping on psychedelics, and you instantly think of the movie Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, or any number of movies that have attempted to show an altered state of awareness and perception. It's kind of like Hollywood tripping. And it's important to note that while, yes, if one took enough of certain hallucinogens, they could have this kind of very visual, crazy, fantastic experience of dinosaurs climbing out of the walls and all that. Yes, that's possible, but that's not, that in and of itself is just like one slice of the cake. There are a lot of other modes of perception and modes of understanding that can be altered by psychedelics. We're talking about changes in your awareness of your own body, visual peculiarities, audible peculiarities, strangeness in thought, in perception, in the experience of time and self. So pretty much any way that we think or see the world can be tweaked. You know, because we talked again earlier, like, what is consciousness? All right, what do we know about how we think and what our brain is? We know that there are chemical processes, that biological processes, and it's subject to change. You can change the way you think by looking at a puppy or a cat. We've talked about that before. There are all sorts of ways to tweak what you're experiencing and how you're experiencing the world and how you're constructing this world that you perceive. We talked about, you know, the whole child versus adult. The child has this lamplight view of the world, and the human has the flashlight view. I mean, all of this is, we're talking about changes in perception. And these substances, depending on what a person takes, how much they take, and also an individual's particular biochemistry, it'll affect that person on varying levels.
Yeah, so I think it's interesting to introduce it like that, because there are various ways, as you say, we can change our perception, and you can sort of do it a little bit or a lot. And certainly through something like psilocybin, that is something that will get you into that spot where you are sort of blowing open the doors of perception. Mm-hmm. And that is why scientists use it, because they are trying to figure out how it is interacting with the brain, what it's doing to personality as well. So when we talked about the default mode network and depression, then it makes sense that neuroscientists want to look at psilocybin and see what sort of effect it has on the human brain.
Yeah. Now, another interesting thing about research into this, and we've touched on this in the past, and around the mid-50s, that's when science really got interested in psychedelics. Mm-hmm. And that's also, you know, you saw the advent of LSD in that age. And you also saw, of course, the rise of the counterculture and all that. So by the end of the 1960s, you saw the end of actual research into this, because it started off, people were looking into, okay, what are these chemicals doing? How are they affecting the mind?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Timothy Leary out there, again, initially approaching things from a more scientific standpoint, but then becoming more and more of a cultural figure and more of a shaman and less of a scientist.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually you have people like John C. Lilly, who are just taking LSD in their in the tank next to the apartment in which the dolphin lives so that he can communicate with the dolphin people.
and subsequently losing his funding,
yes,
because eventually it just gets so nutty that they pull his funding. So you're right. It starts to get clouded with this idea that it's not a good idea to research this LSD.
Yeah, culturally, politically, it just falls off.
Right.
Until the dawn of the 21st century. And so that's where we are now. A decade and some change into that.
Yeah, the 90s really saw a resurgence in this, mm-hmm, and particularly in the last couple of years, too. We've seen a ton of data coming online about this. But when we talk about the default mode network and depression and psilocybin, it's important to talk about someone named David J. Nutt. He is a psychiatrist at the Imperial College of London, and his team recruited 15 healthy people that they made sure to scan beforehand and
make sure there's no history of schizophrenia, that sort of thing.
That they were sound in mind and body. And then they also wanted to make sure that these people had previous experience taking hallucinogens.
This is key, and this is something that McLean brought up in her talk as well, because you're bringing people in to experiment how their brains work and how they perceive things in this state. You don't want to be to introduce them to it for the first time, because that can be a very overwhelming and frightening experience. Better that the test subjects have some experience with this altered state of awareness.
Some sort of context so that they can study the effects
right.
of it better. Over a two-day period, the researchers monitored activity in the brains of these volunteers as they lay in a scanner for up to an hour. On the first day, participants received an intravenous shot of the placebo solution. The next day, they got a shot of psilocybin that was dosed to peak about 4 minutes, and then was mostly over at about 30 minutes. We're talking about a short amount of time here.
Yeah, because the traditional, hippie way of taking these and the shamanistic way of taking these substances, of course, just to eat it, which then is a gradual absorption, gradual trip
Did you say the hippie way?
The hippie way. Well, I'm thinking hippie, yeah. Shaman. Anyone who would say pick one of these things in the natural world and eat it, that is going to be a slower uptake and then a slower fall off.
Yeah.
But this is introduced with IV, so it's just like a rocket ship.
On a side note, too, it's probably really obvious to the participants which was the placebo and which was the actual psilocybin in this case.
Yeah.
Don't you think? I have to guess there's not much of a placebo effect.
Yeah, definitely.
So all of the participants described kaleidoscope vision with images of bright and angular shapes. The rush of the first 10 to 30 seconds induced some fear, Nutt said, but positive feelings then swept over them. And many participants said that the benefits of the experience were profound, and they felt that they had moved on from where they had been. So what they found when they were scanning the brains of these participants was a decrease in both blood flow and metabolism in several key areas after injection. So we're talking about the anterior cingulate cortex.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the one that I mentioned that has a lot to do with the fear and pain response. And also they saw that default mode network quieting itself. So what they found is that here is this way that you can dial down hyperactivity or activity in general in this area of the brain and perhaps relieve depression through this process.
And on one level, how into your own problems can you be if the wall is breathing, right?
That's true. There's not a lot of me going on. Right?
And it is interesting, along those lines, one of the things that McClain mentioned is how a lot of this research, she feels, needs to get out of the lab and deal with, because traditionally, shamanistically, they're not taking these substances and then watching Twin Peaks in the basement, you know? They're not shutting their eyes and plugging in some headphones. No, they're taking them in nature. They're experiencing the natural world through these substances. Granted, they're experiencing an altered understanding and experience of the natural world, but it's a rather different kettle of fish than taking it inside of a closed environment. So again, someone is suddenly becoming more aware of what's around them and outside of themselves, as opposed to that same sad old story about who they are and what their deal is.
What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
Father's Day is coming, a day we celebrate the guy who's always there for us. To crack a dad joke. Well, you know what's not a dad joke? Getting $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker with the purchase of his favorite cocktail capsule pack. $50 off. No dad joke. See, this is a dad joke. I lost my glasses today, and guess who I bumped into? Everyone. But the Bartesian Cocktail Maker, it's no joke. Each cocktail capsule contains real fruit juices and all-natural bitters, so dad can make over 60 premium cocktails he loves. Sidecars, old fashions, gimlets, all with the push of a button. So, for the dad who loves a cocktail with friends and a good joke from time to time, get the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. $50 off now until Father's Day. Visit bartesian.com/father to get 50 off the best premium cocktail maker for dad at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Ever wolfed down a Big Mac and thought, I could use some extra cash? Meet Drop, the ultimate rewards app. Earn free gift cards for getting your daily coffee or late night drive through effortlessly. Just link a card, shop, and watch rewards stack. With Drop, it's like getting paid to indulge. Download Drop now and start earning. Use the code DROP22 for $5 in points instantly.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Now, there's still the question about how long this this can actually affect a person, and that's what they're trying to still go through this data and figure out if these are long-term, meaningful changes in terms of alleviating depression. And we'll talk more about that in part two of this episode. So I did want to mention that there's another way to go about quieting the default mode network. And right now, it seems to be the best way to go about it in terms of sustaining long-term, meaningful changes to your brain. And this is through meditation.
Yes. And this is really fascinating. We spoke earlier, you know, when you're looking at the brain and activity in the brain, we're able to identify what's happening with this particular network. We're identifying this default mode network. And then under psilocybin, we're watching the activity there decrease. But then the same decretion occurs during meditation. Now, it's important to note here that similar brain activity in brain scans that doesn't mean that it's the same experience. So it's not saying that anyone going into meditation should, you know, should be seeing crazy, amazing things in their mind. Not to say that there's not that some of that isn't going on, but identical brain scans don't mean the exact same experience for the individual.
Yeah, I mean, what it's pointing to, again, is that there's this quieting in this chatter area. Dr. Judson Brewer, medical director at the Yale Therapeutic Neuroscience Clinic, and his colleagues asked 10 experienced meditators and 13 people with no meditation experience to practice three basic meditation techniques: concentration, loving kindness, and choiceless awareness. And the team then used fMRI to observe the participants' brain activity when they were practicing the techniques, and then when they were instructed not to think of anything in particular. So the experienced meditators had this decreased activity in the default mode network. Moreover, they found out that this region of their brain was much quieter than in their inexperienced counterparts. So we've talked about this before, the idea that you can actually change your brain to a certain extent through meditation. Again, long-term changes. Mm-hmm. And you'll see this again and again in studies with meditators, is that there's just this ability to concentrate better, to quiet the chattering mind and not wander as much. And I wanted to point this out because, again, the mind is going to wander half of our day spent doing this. But there are some studies that point to this idea that if you can be conscious of your own mind wandering, you can actually be a more creative individual. You can harness your thoughts a lot better. Yeah. So, again, pointing to this idea of meditation as a way not only to quiet the monkey mind, but also to access some really novel ways of thinking.
Yeah, I mean, that's the, you listen to various gurus on this matter, and then that's always like the first step, is being able to identify the monkey mind, the egoic mind, the devil on your shoulder, whatever, however you choose to see, conceive the default mode network. If you can identify it when it's happening, I mean, that's the first big battle. That you can actually stop and say, like, what am I doing? What are my thoughts doing right now? Why am I relaying this stupid idea or this silly fear or even this very real fear? Why am I occupying my mind with it at this moment? And what else could I potentially be using it for?
Right. Or if you're if you realize that your brain is working, say, on a problem and turning things over and over in your mind, but you know that your mind is wandering and it's dealing with this, then you can kind of have a breakthrough.
Yeah.
If you have the realization that your mind is doing this, and then instead of sort of going into the feedback loop of negativity that our brains can kind of do with certain stories that we tell ourselves, you catch yourself like, oh, this is a problem my brain is working on, and, you know, maybe there's a solution here.
Yeah. Because sometimes you just need to turn the dryer off and take the clothes out before the cycle finishes, you know?
Hang them up before they get wrinkled.
On the note of meditation and hallucinations and psychedelic experiences, I will say that in Shavasana, the period at the end of yoga, where after one has done their yoga exercises for an hour, hour and a half, whatever the length may be, and in this state, you're getting out of your mind, you're getting engaged in your body. You're shutting down the default mode network just by putting yourself through a lot of physical poses and engaging the physical body rather than the mind. At the end of that, you go into this state where you either sit or you lay back or maybe legs up the wall, and you go into this meditative state. And on a personal note, I regularly see some really crazy stuff during that period. You know, colors, explosions, clouds, smoke, that kind of thing. Occasionally, I see people. I don't interact with them or anything. That would be a different situation. But I do have these, in a sense, psychedelic experiences during Shavasana. And a lot of people do get this.
Well, and so that's sort of a perfect way to segue into what we will talk about in the second podcast, which is this idea of whether or not hallucinations are natural to humans, to all creatures.
So there you have it. That's part one of The Scientist and the Shaman. Make sure you tune in Thursday for the second episode. And if you're listening to this on down the line, well, it's probably there for you to just move on to right away without any pause, without any stop. As always, you can find us at stufftoblowyourmind.com. That is the mothership. That is the homepage. That is where you will find all of our content, our videos, our blog posts, links to anywhere on the internet we might be doing some sort of business. You will find it there. And we'd certainly love to hear back from you about this particular topic, about psychedelics, about their potential for use in treating various ailments and in their ability to help us understand the human mind, and also just the rich historical and cultural significance of these substances. And how are you going to get in touch with us? Well, you can interact with us on our various social media accounts, or you can send us an email at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Is getting gas at Chevron burning a hole in your wallet? Get the Drop app. With Drop, you can earn free gift cards just by filling up your tank. Download Drop now. Use code DROP77 to instantly receive $5 in points.
You wouldn't expect to hear that we're America's third best city for beer like this one. Or home to vibes like this. And this. It might surprise you that we're top 10 for immersive art that's like,
whoa.
And,
hmm.
Not to mention, we have one of the top zoos in the country. So can a city with the country's best pro soccer team, ranking as a top culinary destination in the world, be in your own backyard? Yes, Columbus. Plan your summer at experiencecolumbus.com/summer.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.